This is a Hipsters of the Coast podcast. This Doom Travelers podcast is brought to you by Hipsters of the Coast, your destination for magic news, strategy, and entertainment. And by Casthaven, where you can build your magic collection like a pro. Visit casthaven.com for more information.
Welcome to the 20th episode of Doom Travelers, the podcast where we play Destiny and talk about magic. We are thrilled this week for the return of Matt the Obliterator Jones. I'm joined, of course, by Dave McCoy. I'm your host, Rich Stein. Unfortunately, Brendan McNamara is unable to join us this week because he is
Avengers.
But don't fear, Matt. Matt is back, but also Brendan will still be joining us as well in the future. But we're very excited for Matt to be back.
Brendan and I just can't exist in the same space at the same time, even our audio versions of ourselves.
It's possible you guys are the same person.
Oh my god.
I actually hadn't considered that possibility.
Rich, shut up. I told you not to tell anybody.
But nonetheless, we're back for another podcast. This is Iron Banner Week, coming to a close this weekend. This is Lord Saladin. So we're all going to jump into the Iron Banner. We'll head to orbit. And to start things off this week, it's been kind of a slow week in the Magic community, but there were... So we're going to... You know, Matt and I don't really play a lot of Magic anymore anyways. So the question this week to get things started is, how do you think your life would be different, Matt, if you had never, ever played Magic?
I wouldn't know a lot of really amazing people that I've become really good friends with over the years. So I think that'd be the main thing. I wouldn't have any of those experiences. And I wouldn't be friends with you guys.
And Dave, how would your life be different?
I mean, honestly, the exact same answer. When I moved out to New York City, everybody I worked with lived outside of the city, and 20-sided store and Magic literally introduced me to the core group of friends that anchor me in the city.
Yeah, and I think, you know, my story is definitely the same. You know, a lot of the community, the people I've met. And the reason I bring it up, of course, is because, you know, as a journalist covering Magic the Gathering and somebody who doesn't play very often, and really I don't play competitively at all anymore, the question I get the most from people I meet when I do go to Friday Night Magic to hang out, or I go to a Grand Prix or a local event, whatever it is, the question I get the most is, how do you... talk about Magic, cover Magic, and remain so involved without playing Magic. And it's, you know, it's a very interesting question, because I think a lot of people have trouble disassociating the game from the community. But ultimately, it's the community that I think everybody kind of gets tied to. And the game kind of comes and goes. But the community is something that obviously stays with you for life. So on that note, Matt, of course, having returned to us from France, is a bit of a changed man, maybe a lot of a changed man. probably not going to be playing so much Magic anymore, yeah?
Yeah, I was actually surprised because when last time I went to Germany, I spent like $2,000 buying German cards to German out all my decks because I prefer German cards. And I actually went to France thinking I would go to this shop that Gabriel Nassif actually recommended, because name drop, my buddy John Finkel contacted him for me and found out what good stores there were to go to. And I didn't even go once. I even had my gallery look up some stores because there were some nearby on the, I think it's called Republic is the area that they're a part of, or the gallery's in, and the stores or the gaming stores are all there too. I didn't even go in at all. I thought about it for like 5 seconds, and I was like, I'm going to go to the loo.
Right. So for our listeners, why don't you give us a quick blurb of what you were doing in Paris for the last month?
Oh, so last year I met this art dealer at an art fair when I was in Brussels, and he offered me a solo show, and I would live in Paris for 1 month. I'd be getting a studio and an apartment. I'd have to pay nothing for either of those, and I'd make work, and then I'd have a show with the work that I made, and that's exactly what happened. Like 100% of exactly what happened. So I lived in Paris for 1 month. My girlfriend visited me for 8 days. We went to a million museums, hung out, ate great food. I had cheese with fried cheese on it, like, every day, twice, and it was incredible. And the museums were incredible.
Did you say you had cheese with fried cheese on it every day?
Yeah, we would like, order a salad. There was this one salad, I can't remember what it's called, and they would have, it would be, like, a legit regular salad with green things in it, and then it would also have, like, 3 toasted pieces of baguette, like slices of baguette, and they would have goat cheese on it, and then maybe fried cheese on top of the goat cheese. And that's the reason you got it. You didn't get it because of the lettuce. You got it because of the fried goat cheese. It was insane.
That sounds pretty good.
And then, you know, after a week and a half of being there, all the supplies that my dealer had gotten for me, we spent like 3 hours at this amazing art store called Marin, which is just outside of Paris, and I had the best canvases I've ever worked on, special made for me. It's actually, they were linen, because linen is incredibly inexpensive there. It's just all shit you can't get in the States at all. And it was super, super inexpensive. And then I had the show, and it was great. And a lot of people came, especially for a guy who had never been to Paris to exhibit before. And a bunch of stuff sold. A bunch of people had really good things to say about it. And best gallery artist relationship I've ever had in my life. It's amazing.
It's pretty amazing.
And now they represent me.
And now you are back. And they represent you in France, right? Or in general?
Yeah.
Or
okay, not in cool. France, in Europe as of right now. I'm sure if I got other dealers in Europe, they'd have to figure it out.
Right. That's exciting.
Yeah, it was best trip of my life, easily.
So Jones, while you were in Paris and not playing Magic, how did all those Magic cards make it into the paintings that you were making?
Yeah, just real quick, for those of you listening, you can go to mattjonesrules.com and take a look at some of the work Matt's done, and also specifically some of the work we're about to talk about.
Yeah, so a lot of, like, I take a lot of pictures of things with my iPhone, and one of the things I took a lot of pictures of, they happen to be Magic cards, because there's a lot of Magic cards in my life. And so, like, I was looking at, there's Mercadian Masks is my favorite type of land, like basic land, I think. And there was a really beautiful forest, and I have a box full of German Mercadian Masks land. And I was telling my girlfriend that I really thought this card was beautiful, and so I took a picture of it and sent it to her. And then when I was in France, I was looking at pictures for things to draw, and so I saw that picture, and then I realized that if I thresholded it in Photoshop, it looked sort of like a butt. And I thought that was really funny, so I printed it out, and then I did a drawing of this forest that looked like a butt. And then all the French people thought that was hilarious. They're like, you know this is a butt, right? Like, no, it's a forest. What are you guys talking about? And same thing, like, when I bought my first Mox, which was a Mox Sapphire, I just kept it in a hard case, and I would, like, put it on top of different things and then take pictures of it with these different things with the idea, could I use this thing that's really beautiful as an object that holds value and meaning to me? And that is actually, like, at this point, a Mox is pretty literally a magical item to me. Even outside of the game, like, it just holds so much. There's something there that is maybe not describable, or maybe better described by somebody who has a really good grasp of language that I do not have. And so a couple of the drawings ended up in my practice over the last year have had Mox Sapphire in it and other things that I've bought that have that kind of value. So things in my life show up in my work, and Magic is in my life. And I think that the fantasy illustrations inside of Magic cards, or that Magic cards have in them, are, I mean, that's remains the best part of the game. When I was a kid, I definitely paid attention to that and had a lot to do with why I became an artist. I was just looking at the card art. So I think paying tribute to that in my work is very important.
Yeah, it's exciting how people find different ways to in their life to tie back to the game, whether it's through writing or through artwork. A lot of there's obviously countless artists get started as artists because they impersonate artists' art that they see, right? It's basically where you start. And magic.
I don't think you ever leave that, really. I think all the best artists are always looking at art and you're just copying stuff to try and find how you make whatever that thing is, you know? And, what's your version of that?
I think Noah Bradley just did a 25-day thing on Twitter where he encouraged people to do that, and he did the same. He would post a work of art, and then not his version, but I think something that he felt was in the style or inspired by.
Yeah, inspired by. I think that's
piece
good.
Of art.
The whole last year of my tenure at Cooper Union, I did was copy Martin Kippenberger paintings, because all I could think about were Martin Kippenberger paintings, and I didn't think I was copying Martin Kippenberger paintings, but I absolutely was just ripping him off left and right. There was nothing I could do about it, and I think that's how you learn. I drew Shiv and Dragons countless times when I was a kid. You know, and now, when I run, I have those big Mirage lands that I got from Arena League a million years ago, and I think the swamp has this, it looks like a muscle man arm coming out of the water, but I think it's supposed to be like a Loch Ness Monster kind of head and neck thing, and I think about that form all the time. And I think it's important to use those forms in your work, especially if they haunt you in that manner, where they're there, in the back of your mind when you're doing other things. And magic's definitely something, and maybe that's the best part about magic, is that it is always in the back of my mind. Even as a guy who, I couldn't care about playing magic any less than I do right now, I don't think. I'm just not even a little interested. But I still think about it a lot. I don't watch Magic on TV, but I just spent $190 on foil unhinged lands from my buddy. I bought them off my buddy, and Kadar was giving me shit. He's like, why did you just buy these? I saw you stop playing. I'm like, I'm not going to play with them. I'm going to get them framed.
They're gorgeous.
I've got them hanging foils. Up.
I have them hanging up, man. I've got those...
the prints? I have the prints.
The prints of the John Avon... part of the John Avon prints for me and Unhinged personally is, sure, I mean, I think the art's gorgeous. I think those lands are just absolutely stunning. But at the same time...
Three out of the five are.
Yeah. but Unhinged was, for me, I was in college during Unhinged, and I played the Unhinged pre-release with my roommates, and, we had bought a bunch of boxes of Unhinged, and we drafted it all the time, and it was really just an experience and a memory that kind of goes into the whole thing, which, ties back to the, things are bigger than the game, right? It's not just a game that's being played here. There's a community built around it.
Didn't they say there's going to be a new Unset soon? Or did I make that up?
Mark Rosewater constantly is asking people if they want a new Unset. So, we can switch gears for a second here on Unsets. The problem with the Unsets was that when they came out, Wizards was not really... they didn't really understand the market properly for a set like Unhinged and Unglued. What they ended up doing was they printed those sets the same way that they would print any other expansion set.
Really?
So the print runs were massive compared to the demand. And since then, they've learned how to temper that with sets like Plane Chase and Arch Enemy. And now, of course, I think with Conspiracy... they really got the numbers down. So,
I have a 0.69 kill-death ratio, by the way. I have another.
Hey-o.
Did you really?
That's just no how way. I'm starting the night off. I'm going to start off with a 0.69. Boom!
Where is it? Wow, good job. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
But so the problem is that historically now there's this stigma that that it was a bad set because it didn't sell to the expectations that they printed. And that was true for both Unsets. So that's why that Mark Rosewater has trouble getting the green light for the next Unset. And he wants to do it. But somebody recently asked him if he thought which would come first, Conspiracy 2 or Unset 3. And he said he believes Conspiracy 2 will happen first.
Well, see, here's the thing, though. I think Conspiracy was very much a Unset 2.5, or maybe 2.1. Yeah, 2.1, I guess, is a closer... because I don't want to say like it was really a full Unset. But
you have to remember, the point of the Unsets is that the Unsets are a parody of Magic.
Sure, but what I'm saying is...
did you play Conspiracy?
I did. I personally did. But what I'm trying to say is what the Unsets do in terms of Magic as a game, like as a culture, it's a parody of Magic. But in terms of what it does for the game and its mechanics, it's a place to test out off-the-wall ideas. And a few silver-bordered mechanics made it into real black-bordered Magic. And Conspiracy felt like a very similar attempt. Without the parody, but with the knowledge that they were trying things that wouldn't work in normal Magic, thus the Conspiracies couldn't be played out in any like sanctioned kind of Magic. But it was a very similar attempt to try something off the wall.
What are the ones that made it into Black Border Magic?
Oh, man.
Off the top of my head, there was the Cheese Stands Alone became Baron something. There was it's the enchantment that says if you have no other permanents in play, you win the game.
Yeah.
And there are a few.
And then, yeah, there were
that's
a few.
That's awesome. Mechanics. Yeah, I was just curious. I wasn't challenging you. I just had never heard.
Yeah, no. Trying to remember. There's some really. There's like a really massive one, like a massively used mechanic made its first appearance in the Unsets and then ended up. Obviously, Full Art Lands first appeared in the Unsets.
There have only been three Full Art Lands, right? Unglued, Unhinged, and.
And Zendikar, right?
And they're doing Zendikar Full Art again, right?
In theory, it's a safe bet that Battle for Zendikar will feature Full Art Lands again.
Cool.
I'd be shocked. I mean, they've said for a while...
I will buy boxes of those.
They've said for a while now that they're coming, that Full Art Lands are coming back, so... I would be shocked
if
it wasn't.
It's exciting. Full Art Land is so cool.
It is pretty cool. I mean, it's obviously got to be something that they don't do all the time.
Yeah. As long as they don't butcher it the way they've butchered the way that they do full art other cards now, I just think all the other full art cards are terrible. They had a really good, in the time of Innistrad, they were pretty good. And then they just shit the bed with all the special promos that they have now. They're just like, it's so ugly the way they do it.
Yeah, the player rewards promos were pretty sweet. Those full art cards are pretty cool. But none of the game day promos have been even vaguely aesthetically pleasing.
Strangle. I bought a playset of Strangle Geists when I was playing that that green red deck back in the day. I thought that card looked pretty good.
That kind of looked like a combination of like Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes and the Strangle Root Geist. I don't know. For some reason, it just reminded me of Hobbes. Not Calvin and Hobbes. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's why I thought that's why I liked that one, not because I thought it was pretty or looked interesting.
But I think it's really interesting, like the full art things, they make you see the cards differently and you think about the cards differently when you experience them differently.
Right.
And I love when they do stuff like that. So it's like they don't have to change any mechanics, it just looks and feels differently, which changes the whole experience.
Yeah, it's a huge part of the game.
The world is much more convincing when it's a lot more brilliant and beautiful.
I agree, and it'll be interesting to see how they do Land Matters again with Zendikar. But I don't want to get too far into Zendikar, of course, because we've got another set right around the corner. Previews start this week for Modern Masters 2015. Matt, you're not playing. I'm sure you are so stoked for this set.
I feel like Modern Masters has so much hype and it has so much money value that it's always a bummer compared to how much fun it is. Like, Modern Masters 1, I only drafted like 10 times and I had a really good time. Maybe 7 of those drafts. The least good time was the last time I drafted it, like a couple months ago at Kadar Studio, and the best time was the time immediately before that, like 2 months prior. And
right.
I think the set's super fun, but it's like, you get priced out of it so fast, and you have like $50 buy-in, and then you have to have all these rules for when you redraft the rares, because, you know, Magic players care about value and money, and you just have, it's just the fucking worst. It's the worst.
Yeah.
And then people get upset, they're like, oh, I opened a Tarmogoyf. What do I do? Oh, I have to pass it because I'm in this $50 draft. Oh, shit, I hate myself. And it's like, it's just a fucking piece of paper, man. Like, who cares? You can't even play with
right.
it. You've got to pass it. All you got to do now is try to win the draft so that you can get the... That's just silly. So I think that Modern Masters 2 will have equally ridiculous valuable cards in it. I mean, obviously, Tarmogoyf is in it. There will be more, I'm sure. And it's just not... Like, that sucks all the fun out of it. Like, I'm going to GP Las Vegas. I would not be surprised if I drop immediately after getting my packs and just rent a car and go to the Grand Canyon. Because I can't deal with, like, how upset people are going to get. Or listening to people say, like, if I have to listen to somebody talk about how shitty their sealed pool is, I think I'll just scream. I'll just scream. I'll have to carry me away in a white jacket and tie my arms around my back.
Yeah, it's you know, and I'm hearing already that reports coming out that Modern Masters 2 is going to have, obviously the packs are more money, so I'm already hearing that drafts are going to be in the $60 plus range.
Great.
So right off the bat, we're talking even more money.
Well, they retail for $10, right?
Yeah.
$12, I thought. No, $10?
No, they retail for $10. Yeah, but I'm seeing 60.
Even so, man, for a hobby, like, I like to rifle through drafts. I think rifling through drafts is fun as shit. You know, like, if I'm in a draft, I'll do, like, 4 in a day. So if I do 4 Modern Masters drafts, I'm out $120? Like, that's, like, 3 canvases. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's not, like, 3 canvases. I mean, 3 little ones, I guess. But it's still, like, that's a lot of money for a fucking hobby.
Especially like, for people crazy. Who can barely afford to play regular Magic, let alone.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a little concerning because
I spent $60 on Destiny one time, and then I spent $30 on the 2 DLCs.
Yeah.
That's $90, and I've been playing this. When did this game come out? In July?
Yeah, September-ish.
Whatever. Still, it's a million years in Magic time.
Yeah, you're basically right.
Yeah, or the zero-ish dollars that most people spend on Hearthstone.
Yeah, honestly, that's right. One of the reasons I stopped playing Constructed was it just kept costing way too much money. It is so much more cost-effective for me to draft with my friends than it is to continually update a standard or modern deck.
It's a very expensive game to play, and the interesting thing is that Modern Masters is supposed to help that problem, not exacerbate it.
It just never works that way. Like, it didn't work that way last time. It's not going to work that way this time. I don't think Wizards really understand anything other than how to basically make really good sets that are really fun to play, and they don't even get that right all the time. But they get it right enough of the time that it's awesome.
Well, see,
when they start playing with the economy of Magic, I think they just fuck that up every time.
But here's the thing, I don't think it was a failure in terms of addressing the financial aspects of Modern. They did poorly with the Mythics, like Tarmogoyf and Bob and Vendilion Click, but every rare dropped. I think the last numbers I looked at or read were like 50%. The rares dropped in value by 50%, which... is basically what the set was supposed to do.
Part it did, but the new Modern Masters, I'm more worried about because it's more expensive, and there are already reports coming in from stores that they're getting a smaller initial allocation of Modern Masters 2015 than they did of the original. And that's a little disturbing, but I honestly think that the problem there lies with the distributors. But that's a topic for another day, I think.
I mean, I think the overarching question about Modern Masters is whether or not you can successfully moderate the cost of modern cards through a draftable set. You know, Commander's Arsenal is one way of getting new cards out there, or like reprints out there. But it's not meant to be drafted, you know, so you don't have to pay $60 to draft it once. So whether or not trying to wrap reprints, like money-based reprints, in a limited set is a good idea remains to be seen, because it just ends up pricing people out of actually drafting it.
Yeah.
Okay, do you feel this way? Like, Luis sent out an email saying that he was making it available. All the Modern Masters pre-order boxes were becoming available, and I'm intending on buying none of them. But even in reading that, I was like, "Oh shit, I'm screwed. If I don't buy these boxes, I'm going to be way behind. I'm not going to have any of these boxes. I'm not going to have any fun. Like, I'm just going to miss out on all this value. Like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, I feel really stressed about that. And so
that's the fear of missing out.
I just can't do it.
I know, I understand that feeling, and I understand why that pushes you away from wanting to engage in it. I personally bought one box, mostly because I wanted to make sure that I got to draft it once, without having to argue with someone about the place or cost of the draft. So if it's my box, I get to determine those things. And if I want, I could just have everybody draft them for free and just keep everything, you know? So yeah, anyway, that's why I bought a box. But yeah, it's probably not going to be worth the amount of money I spent on it in terms of like actual value I get out of it. But in terms of fun and companionship, it'll be totally be worth it.
How much did you spend on it?
Like $265 from Luis.
Is that good or is that bad?
I think that's retail.
It's a little over retail.
Like retail $240. That's not too bad.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. I don't know how familiar you guys are with sports cards, trading sports cards. In the sports card trading world, there's these people who do box breaks on the internet. And the way that they do this is basically, so for example, in the NHL, there's 30 teams in the NHL. And you would buy into the box an amount of money for a team. So you would, you know, basically bid on eBay or however you wanted, and you would get a 30th share of this box, right? And then whoever owns the box opens it up, and every rare goes to whoever paid for that team. And you're basically just getting, you know, some people are getting a ton of value and some people are getting nothing. But everybody is just taking a risk. And I thought to myself, could you do that with a box of Modern Masters, and get people to buy into the colors? You know, say, you know, you'd bid on how much is the green share of the box worth, right? Or the blue share for whatever rares there are. And then whatever rares you open, go to whoever paid for that color.
Interesting.
It seems more complicated and like less interesting, but also another way to do that.
Yeah.
It was just a thought I had. But Modern Masters is probably going to be filled with a ton of value. Some spoiler, by the time you're listening to this at home or on the road, wherever you are, spoiler season will have already begun. And you'll know some of the cards. We'll all know some of the cards, but spoilers start this week. And the expectation is that there will not be another situation like the Kamigawa Dragons. All 15 mythics are expected to be bombs. All 5 commands are expected to be reprinted. There's going to be a lot of value in this set. So I don't think that you should be too concerned, Dave, with the value you'll get out of your box.
Sweet.
I wish they'd go back to old borders.
For the aesthetic.
Yeah, it's so much more personal feeling.
Yeah, the problem with the old borders was there wasn't enough space in the tax rules box.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Quit writing so much text. They should do full art old border cards with no text.
That would be next. I don't know. I've seen some alters of full art old border cards.
They should just send out prints of the card. The card art.
Yeah, they should send out prints. Any art that I like, they should send me prints of. That's it. And then I'll only say really great things about Magic all the time.
Nice. There you go. On that note, this is we're gonna keep playing some Iron Banner, but I think this is it for this episode, Doom Travelers. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully all your boxes of Modern Masters contain exactly what you hoped they'd contain, which is probably multiple foil Tarmogoyfs. So, Matt, now that you're back from France, can you remind me how to turn this off?
Hey Guardians, thanks for tuning in to the Doom Travelers podcast. You can find more at doomtravelers.com or follow at Doom Travelers on Twitter for show updates and other nonsense. Make sure to subscribe to Hipsters TV on YouTube for videos of our previous episodes, and don't forget that you can find audio-only versions of the Doom Travelers podcast on iTunes. For your host Rich Stein and Matt the Obliterator Jones, I'm David Bones McCoy. See you next time.